Well, now let's shift attention away from the Great Lakes and over to another part of Michigan's water wonderland, our rivers and inland lakes. What do we need to do as a state to preserve and protect them? Joining me here in the studio is the executive director of the Huron River Watershed Council of Southeast Michigan, Laura Rubin. Welcome. Tell us, what does the Watershed Council do?
In general, we protect the entire watershed. So that's the 910 square miles in Southeast Michigan. Starts up in Oakland County, Livingston, Washtenaw, Wayne County, and empties into Lake Erie. So people think of the river corridor itself, mm-hmm. but it's also all of the land area that drains to the river. That makes up the watershed. And then there's the Lake Erie watershed, which has many rivers that drain to it, the Great Lakes watershed, okay. et cetera, et cetera.
And I dare say many of us have heard that term watershed, but perhaps weren't exactly clear what it meant.
Yes, exactly. And many people think of it as only the water over the surface of the land, but also as we learn about groundwater, mm-hmm. it's where the water flows underneath the ground.
So let's talk a little history. How far do you think we as a state have come in our awareness of water protection since the Federal Clean Water Act was passed? That was 1972. How have we done since then?
We've done very well. As you'll remember, we really had a crisis with our rivers and lakes in the 60s. I mean, that's when we had lakes catching on fires mm-hmm. and we had a lot of industrial pollution. The Clean Water Act went a long way of regulating those pipes. So those pipes we see that came from pulp and paper mills, tanneries, wastewater treatment plants, the Clean Water Act required really strict technologies to clean up that. And that has spurred quite a bit of improvements in our water quality. What has shifted since then, though, is that what we call non-point source pollution mm-hmm. is the major source of pollution now.
And what is that?
That's the diffuse source of pollution that comes from all of us, our daily behaviors. It's what comes off of our roofs and our parking lots and our roadways. It's carrying the heavy metals from our cars. It's carrying the fertilizer from our lawns. It's carrying any garbage or motor oil there. It's carrying a lot of sediment, and sediment carries nutrients like phosphorus and nitrogen. It also is carrying warmer water because when water hits hot pavement, it keeps it warmer, and that water is going directly to our creeks. So now nationwide, non-point source pollution is the major source of pollution to our rivers and lakes.
And I think it would be, am I right, much more difficult to curb that and control that than,
it is.
than clamping down on industry.
Exactly. Industry, you know you can go to that mm-hmm. one pipe, or you know that you can develop technologies that will meet that. Non-point source is a lot of education. I mean, a lot of it is behaviors that we have on our lawns, on our landscaping, where we choose to live. It also does have to do with policies, though, in terms of soil erosion control. You can regulate. The state just passed phosphorus law legislation that can regulate how much phosphorus goes down. So there are other strategies, but I'd say they're tenfold more in terms of all the different avenues that you need to hit. And unfortunately, with non-point source pollution, there's not one magic bullet. You can't really say,
if we
can only do this.
Well, what
so
about,
it's really a multifaceted approach.
What about personal responsibility and behavior changes and modifications? What can we do individually?
It's very important at the home site. Mm-hmm. One of the things people can do is the next rainstorm, go out, see where your water is hitting your roof, going to your gutter. A lot of times those downspouts from the gutters are directly connected to your driveway or your street. Redirect those to a grassy area, an area that has some native plants that take that up, something that can store and infiltrate that. Two of the common things that have come about are rain gardens and rain barrels, and you hear more about this. Rain barrels have a little nostalgia to them, but that's capturing some of that rainwater and reusing it in our garden. And not only is it helping the river in terms of reuse, but it's saving the homeowner money. Because rather than watering and paying a high water bill.
Sure. So instead of having it running down your driveway and into the gutter.
Yes.
You're actually
yeah.
making use.
And a lot of this is thinking about rain or stormwater as a resource. Mm-hmm. Historically, because Michigan is such a wet area, swampy area, we developed drain commissioners when we came first to the state to drain the water off the land. We have a mentality that we want to get water off as mm-hmm. fast as we can and away. And
because who wants a leaky basement?
Who wants a leaky basement? Or flooding.
Sure.
You know, all
sure.
those kinds of things. And we now need to really, if we're going to protect our lakes and our streams, see water more as a resource. Mm-hmm. See it as something that we can keep on site. It's beautiful. We can reuse. It's an ethic that's definitely out in the West, where water shortages are, at the forefront, yes, of everybody's mind. Here they aren't as much. But clearly water conservation and water reuse is catching on.
What about climate change?
Climate change, I think regardless of whether it's human-induced or not, mm-hmm, and some of the controversy out there, we are seeing changes in the severity of our storms, the intensity, the rainfall that's coming within a 4-hour period, a 2-hour period. And we're also seeing an intensity in the droughts. So we have last summer where we had a severe drought, mm-hmm, and then we have this year where the first 6 months, I think, is the third wettest summer on record for 6 months. We're going to see more of this wide variety, these climatic swings, or as people call them, weirdness.
Weirdness. And what does that do to the rivers and lakes?
Well, one of the things we're trying to do is we're trying to help our communities be more adaptable to that, have greater adaptation so that, what happens is we get these huge influxes of water. We saw on June 27th in Ann Arbor, streets flooded, yes, people canoeing and kayaking down them. We need to have the infrastructure, not only pipes and gray infrastructure, but the green infrastructure, the wetlands, the floodplains, mm-hmm, the forests that can absorb that water and slowly release it back into the river. Similarly, when we have droughts, wetlands, floodplains, our groundwater, they store that water. And then in the drought period, they are slowly releasing that into the system. We saw Grand Rapids this spring, severe flooding.
Very.
We saw what happened last year to our cherry crops, our apple crops, our fruit crops. This kind of climatic swings, we have to learn how to adapt and adjust to it. So as the Watershed Council, we've really been working with, sort of our stakeholders, the people who deal with water infrastructure, natural infrastructure, in-stream flows, dam operators. How are you going to put these climatic scenarios into your planning models so that when the city is looking at building a new development or redevelopment, mm-hmm, or parking lot, how do you size the pipes? Mm-hmm. What should the sizing be like? How much, again, gray infrastructure versus green infrastructure? And a lot of the communities throughout Michigan are starting to incorporate green infrastructure to a much greater extent than ever before. Detroit is a great example. They're looking at a lot of aging infrastructure, a combined sewer stormwater, yes, system. They don't have the resources, nope, to invest a lot. So a lot of it is they have land. They can put in rain gardens. They can do tree plantings. They can put in some of this green infrastructure that will help offset the load that normally goes to the big pipes.
I'm speaking with Laura Rubin, who's the executive director of the Huron River Watershed Council of Southeast Michigan, and looking at our rivers and our lakes and discovering how healthy they are and what we need to do to preserve and protect them. And we have to spend some time talking about the fact that this month marks the third anniversary of the Enbridge oil spill near the Kalamazoo River. So you had 800,000 gallons of oil that spilled out from that pipeline owned by Enbridge. First of all, from your perspective, how has the cleanup progressed?
It's been slow. I think there have been a couple hurdles there, mm-hmm, hurdles just in terms of the technology that we have in our pipeline system to respond to these things, the shutoff valves, the emergency controls. Mm-hmm. They're weaker than we would like to see, and that's something that has to be addressed at the federal level. But I think also in terms of the kinds of oil transportation that we're dealing with. This was crude heavy oil. It's not what we're used to. Most people think of Exxon Valdez, other things, mm-hmm, where you put the booms out and the oil is sitting on the top of the water. One of the things that made this spill so complicated is that it was heavy, it was sticky, it was the tar sands oil. It sinks and we don't know where it moves. We don't know, they're still finding out. Just this summer, they have three huge cleanups where, again, they're pulling out the entire bottom of a river, either the riverbank or an impoundment, and hauling it off. This is 3 years later. It's become the most expensive inland oil spill. And I'm actually surprised there's not more national attention on this, especially around discussions with the Keystone Pipeline, pipeline expansion in the state of Michigan. I know in the Huron, we're very concerned about the expansion of the pipeline system. They've just bought a new line just south of Ford Lake and Belleville Lake that's going to be carrying this heavy crude oil. And we're very concerned about the regulations that are there, the cleanup technologies, the understanding of what it's all about.
And just how you strike the balance between the fact that we need the oil and we coming from Canada closer than coming from the Middle East, and we need to be the masters of our destiny in more of a way than we have been yet. You see something like this.
Yeah. And you have the interplay with fracking that's going on in this state, too, where we're really struggling with now with the Marcellus Shale, you know, in the upper lower peninsula and in the UP, what that is doing, what kinds of regulations, what we've seen some of the impacts potentially in Pennsylvania, New York. You know, there are trade-offs with all of these different kinds of energy use. And so a lot of it really comes down to, you know, where can we find efficiency? Where can we find cleaner sources? What are the best and most secure energy sources for us? But they're tough, tough questions.
With no easy answers. But are you hopeful for the continued preservation of Michigan rivers and lakes? Do you feel hopeful? Do you feel worried?
I'm very hopeful. We have a wonderful project called River Up, and many communities throughout Michigan have similar projects. This is a project that really brings the focus back to our rivers and really makes them a focal point of our communities. We call it a river renaissance, and that's a heavy word. But historically, we had our backs to the river. They were used for industry and navigation, and they were undesirable places. And we are now seeing that our rivers are a tremendous asset to our communities. They're our dominant natural feature that we have. They are a source of economic vitality, recreational vitality, cultural, and they give us a sense of place. And so with this effort, we have been overwhelmed by the response from our private and public partners on revitalizing the Huron, making it the main streets of our communities.
Not the toilet.
Not the toilet, exactly. So, you know, we have the cleanup of the DTE Mishcon property in Ann Arbor that has been sitting there for, you know, decades, really heavily contaminated, wanting them to be a part of this river revitalization, turn it into an attractive amenity for the city, bring in a restaurant, some, you know, vitality there. In Grand Rapids, we have that community talking about removing the four small cofferdams in downtown and bringing the rapids back to Grand Rapids. And it is part of the placemaking, the vitality of the downtown. People are interested in putting up commercial and residential along our riverfronts. In Traverse City, we have the Boardman River, where they're taking out three dams there. And they talk about the community reinvestment. You know, in addition to the environmental benefits of removing the dams, that community really sees it as a revitalization project. So that makes me very optimistic about the future of Michigan's rivers and lakes, in that people see that, you know, one of the core values of Michigan is our natural resources and the beauty. You know, yes, we're surrounded by all the Great Lakes, but, you know, we have 36,000 miles of river and over 11,000 lakes. And that's a tremendous resource. And as people look of relocating businesses and wanting to be more around high quality of life, and that's becoming more important, that's a great asset that Michigan has.
Your passion for rivers is just shines out. What drives that? Where did that come from?
I grew up along Lake Michigan, and I've always loved water. I love getting in it, swimming in it. I love sitting by it. And I also truly believe, I also have a business background. I truly believe that our business interests and our environmental interests can go hand in hand. I know you've had John Austin here talking about the blue economy and the green economy. I think it's wonderful opportunities that we have here. And you can see the sparks in our community of people who have that vision of developing a waterfront business or a livery or a water-related industry and green technologies. And it's so exciting in this state because we are in a transition in our economy of developing, you know, new economies, less of the large manufacturing. And I think we have great opportunities.
And with opportunity, the other side of the coin would be threats. So in your view, really spell out what you see as the biggest threats and the things we most need to be on guard against.
Well, I think a lot of it is how we do redevelop the state. I think we need to keep strong wetlands control, strong sand dune protections, and this state has been very good on that in the past. And it's balancing some of those business needs with those environmental needs. I think we need good leadership at the state for that, at the local level, but also community support. When people come out and talk about their passions for the lakes and the rivers, that's wonderful. It adds to it. And also when we can try to provide more of an economic value to our angling businesses and our fishing and recreation and tourism, that boosts that blue economy that we've talked about.
We've been speaking with the executive director of the Huron River Watershed Council of Southeast Michigan. Laura Rubin, it's been a pleasure to have you here in the studio with us.
Oh, thank you very much. It's been my pleasure.